With October so near and still so warm, we bring you Kristen Iskandrian's exploration of the shapes of paper and glue, the hall smells, the return to the place where most of us have been and picked the carpet, school. As she reads from her ever-growing project, The School, Iskandrian gives us a precise capture of the intense, mythical, and scouring eye that such a place demands as it presents its pockets, wonders, and plain facts about function and future. So sit back, pretend you are in an Iskandrian's living room, her cat prowling for your attention, and enjoy The School.
Hello, my name is Kristen Iskandrian, and I'm very excited to be reading today for Apostrophe Cast with my live studio audience of my cat. I'm going to be reading some selections from a project called The School. And by way of a brief introduction, The School is something that I started in early 2006. I feel not only that it is ongoing, but that it could be so indefinitely. Perhaps it is because I have spent most of my life as a student, perhaps because my earliest curiosities were shaped and informed by it, perhaps because I always felt myself both very much inside and very much outside of it, the school sits in my imagination, suffocatingly asprawl. So again, perhaps writing this is a way to poke some breathing holes into my consciousness, to install, as it were, a vent through which unsteady selves, younger student cast-off selves, and the narrator self, belatedly ubiquitous and omniscient, respire. And maybe expire. The school here is as much a physical, quotidian place as it is a mythical one. All the objects and fixtures are intact, or if not, will be fastened more tightly, reinforced more fastidiously, by the only character thus far who has a name, the janitor, Mr. Buddy. The school is the setting, but also largely the plot, the characters, and the conflict. The things in it, the people who dart across it, eventually cede to its presence, bend to its will, or else find themselves adrift. And it is really this adriftness that forges the narrator, this eye who sees but who has also already seen, who learns but who has also already learned, who strives but who has also already quit. We have here the before written from the perspective of the after. Currently, there are about 21 sections total. Each section is quite short, named for the thing the narrator attempts to describe, translate, or overcome. It might be a school subject, a specific room or location, a typical activity, or, as in Mr. Buddy's case, a person. I will try reading at least 10 of these sections for you right now. Dress. I wore many layers. I veiled. Janitor. I found Mr. Buddy in an empty classroom, gnawing on a chicken leg well before the bell rang. We looked at each other with the same eyes, the eyes of early morning, of exile, of before the others. Everything about him was thick and dirty, his crew cut, his black t-shirt, jeans and belt, his brown work boots, his fingers, his protruding belly and chin. Every day I looked for him, but we never said a word. I knew the route. It never varied. In his presence, I could see what he saw, the footprints and smudges and electricity and mildew, the studs in the walls. He lived underground, I felt certain, deep in the bowels of the school. I wanted to see the furnace and the narrow bed where he slept, and the rusty locker where he kept a change of thick black clothes. If he left the premises, all of it would disappear. Gym. I sat along the back and thought about my bones, how my hand could lift and pour not its own self, but the contents of, for example, a pot. Not the pot's bone sealed in steel and enamel, but the stuff in its hollow. I poured the pot of porridge into a bowl. I did not pour, the hand did not pour, the pot did not pour. The fingers lifted and tipped the pot, and the porridge poured, invertebrate and senile. The man with the whistle started screaming, "You, get in here." I moved myself upright and my ankles cracked themselves. I didn't see the points of anyone's hips but my own as I tugged down the shorts that were like silvery fish. The man with the whistle was showing everyone how to sneer, for once his instruction was sound. The boy with the sharp teeth threw the ball so hard at my chest that my ribs rattled a little in their cage. I was not afraid, and I did not yet know about the foolishness of most everything. I felt a bit like I was snowing. My arms needed my hands to let go of the ball at the right moment, and they did perfectly, and the ball, over the heads of the necks that craned, eyeless, poured itself into the net. The net hung like a loose gullet, fleshy. Phonics. I was trying to determine the difference between A and A, and C and C, and E, and the whole enterprise just left me cold. Indiscreetly, therefore, I looked at my neighbor's workbook. She knew all about the differences between A, and C, and E, as though she had invented them herself, which she probably had, for all I knew. She held her pencil in the wrong hand, though, and scratched feverishly at a hard red thing on her arm. That I trusted her grieved me like a war, like the piles of dead after a war. I ravaged all of her circles, pillaged her workbook page by page as she flipped and scratched, flipped and scratched. The field between my eyes and her crooked, wrong little hand swarmed with buzzards, echoed with retreating cries muffled by her flip scratch. I circled and wept, three tears only, droplets smaller than vapor, but each soaked the page with wide dark circles that washed away the correct circles, the ones we'd worked so hard for. Hall. The hallway smelled like sawdust, not figuratively. The girl with all the pink had gotten sick again between the room with the globes and the room with the kite. Mr. Buddy missed a spot, a spray of islands off the mainland, and the boys were pointing to it and laughing. I wanted something to point at, but I felt I needed practice. I was delivering a message to the main office at the time. It was thin and pink, folded and stapled. I held it out in front of me and pointed to it with my other hand, but I couldn't hold it far enough away not to touch it. The point failed. I let it flutter and land on the swirl-colored floor and pointed, hard. Music. The knuckle sandwich boy once again put a crayon in the projector and the room smelled like smelting. This time it was corn flour. On screen, the flat and the sharp had been hopping up and down, interrupting one another, swinging around the treble clef like it was a jungle gym and scaling up the taut black lines of the staff. They had just summoned the natural, a number sign with fringy eyelashes, when smoke engulfed them, clouded their cord. They hung onto each other for dear life as we watched, confused by the sudden smog silhouetted before us and the waxy, sinister smell in our nostrils. The teacher turned on the lights, his percussive, shiny head an orb of worry and also fear. I looked at him, and I knew that the milk in his refrigerator at that precise moment was turning. I wanted to tell him, to save him from pouring it over his cereal that night or drinking it straight from the container, to stop him from feeling it spoil, from spraying it into the rust-ringed sink, from wiping his mouth on an acrylic sweater sleeve. Everyone was covering their noses and filing out of the room. The boy with the crayon was told to stay put, and his squashed grin could not conceal his grief. The grief of expectations unmet, of smoke dingy and not cornflower blue. I couldn't see the good of leaving when two people were awash in dire disappointment, when comfort was so desperately in demand. I could be a point of fixity, a guero unscraped. Cafeteria. All the trays were a hard, light blue, the color of dentist cups, all except one, which was navy. Stack, the dark stripe, was interruptive, a nuisance. Each day I saw it, I wondered why they insisted on keeping it, on subjecting it and us to the daily degradation. I imagined it behind the scenes, safe under reams of paper towels or on somebody's desk, laden with paper clips, staples, and index cards, newly useful, bound and determined like a parolee. or taken behind the building, behind the dumpsters, and shot. No matter how many others he sat with, the one who got it would be alone and in constant danger of the mustard smear, the upset carton. I took it without resistance, without trepidation. I could be very stalwart. I took it freely and sat at my own table, freely. Math. Whereby a quarter to four is greater than, less than, or equal to a half past four, whereby you must please excuse my dear Aunt Sally, whereby a bushel does not equal a peck, but equals a train approaching a stop at how many miles per hour, when a train approaching an opposite stop at how many miles per hour equals the number of miles between the two stops minus the number of frightened passengers, whereby division is long with wrong remainders and subtraction means borrowing from the ones and from the ones with nothing, such that even zeros must give of themselves, must somehow become nines and tens, like those photographs of hard times that show old people and babies lugging bricks and buckets of water, whereby to multiply means X and also to add very quickly, 12 plus 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 12, but higher than that, you dared not go alone, whereby the calculator that shut itself off in the cool dark of the desk and blinked awake under the fluorescence, was confiscated to the sound of little whimpers, whereby graph paper, compasses, and rulers were dignitaries of the despot who'd caused the suffering in the photograph, the destruction of the tangled happy town that the old people and babies were rebuilding and had been rebuilding for centuries, brick by brick, degree by degree, exact measurement by exact measurement, 1 1,000, 2 1,000, 3 1,000, where quadruple, where infinity, all chomp chalk, perspire, conspire, cough, dust, carry the eight. Janitor closet. It was both whispered and yelled that feces and 1,000 spiders lived in the janitor closet, either at the bottom of the deep paint-splattered sink or in the pail beside it, or both. The one who had the same slicker as I, reversible, yellow on one side and navy blue with small, smiling, spurting whales on the other, got pushed inside one afternoon when Mr. Buddy left the door ajar. The door clicked, locked shut. We were both wearing our slickers that day, both on the whale side. The implications of this skittered beneath my skin, like insects, like spiders. I wanted to help but did not know how, and my panic made me hot, and I felt certain very conspicuous. I ducked into the bathroom and turned my raincoat inside out. The outside, now the inside, had been slightly damp, and now I was cocooned in a terrible humidity. Even with my hood over my ears and the faucet running, I heard the banging, the cry to be let out. The laughter was beginning to stall. I urged myself to find Mr. Buddy and his thick keys that could release my doppelganger. I saw myself as hero. Library chewing gum. The carpet looked like wallpaper. We sat on it, a heap of shoes and breath and elbows, to listen to tales that were never as strange as their names promised. I never knew how close was too close, and so ended up in the front row, my nose knee level to the librarian's shiny nyloned knee. Or else somewhere off to the back, near where, like in the story, the motes frolic. Sometimes we were to close our eyes and use our imaginations. I couldn't imagine anything if I couldn't see. I kept mine open. Without everyone looking, I could see better, more. Birthmarks, underwear tags, downy hair on she thighs, he calves. Everyone bore the same expression, the look of the lost. A blissful, quieting look, like the last bit of milk spooned. The girl whom everyone called retarded smiled through the heads at me. Eyes opened, we smiled. At the long table she sat, splotchy and pale. Diagonal from her I read sentences and watched. Every night she dreamed about the beautiful black horse. She couldn't wait to leave the city. Father had promised her new boots and a fancy new riding crop. The girl held the book's blade and close to her face, its dull green back cover in one sweaty hand and the rest of it in the other. She leaned closer. She licked the inside of the dull green back cover hesitantly and then again, with gusto, her mouth pressing hard into the book. When she saw me, she purpled, the point of tongue still visible. A banished star. I did not look away and was rewarded when she turned the inside of the book to show me, a small, hard, grayish thing, now glistening. She saw my face and slid the book to me, and I put my tongue where hers had been. It was fresh, minty. Science. Pluto, the smallest planet, is not so very different from bedrock, which consists of layers of calcified silt and sediment that over time erode. Continents drift and tectonics plate and Pangaea and hydrangea. Precipitation and or atmosphere may or may not create the nimbus clouds and the cumulus clouds and the cumulonimbus clouds which empty their fleecy insides into the oceans, which become the rivers and streams and tributaries and glaciers and eventually the rain again, which swells the ocean until the moon is crescent-shaped, gibbous, or full. I was often asked to repeat the last thing the unhappy woman said. I hid one book inside the other, marsupial-like. Lunch. The cord of the burgundy change purse left a faint reddish stain on the back of my neck. Inside, the leather was soft, crummy, and upside down. Each letter was a stick figure, leaning and waving awkwardly. So much depended on its dingy brass button, so much more trustworthy than a zipper. Some kept bills in their shoes, slipped them into the tubes of their socks. Some kept quarters deep in pockets, unfazed by the whiten and scrape of their knuckles. Carrying a change purse was like carrying around a goodnight kiss or a finger from a mother's flowered hand, like leading a pack mule with some rope. There was no room for it, not on the crowded body, not in the crowded line. The meat smell started in line. Everything, even the pudding and the bowl of sad apples, bore the meat smell grimly but without complaining. The hamburgers, gray, sat in rows in their opened buns, pearls in oysters, to me. But to most, they were for throwing, for mashing up with milk and mayonnaise so that days later a hard telltale speck would remain in the rounded corner of the tray's main chamber. Or the boy with the fleshy lips would take the hamburger from its canopy bed and put it on the seat of the girl with the pink sneakers, the ones that jangled from all the bead-strung safety pins when she got up to get a straw. I didn't know some food was for laughing at. I wanted to teach myself how to hate what I loved and love what I hated, but each bite of my hamburger overwhelmed me with its good tastingness. I tried to put it down, but I couldn't. The flat pickle discs that had long ago in some faraway jar given up were returned to their zenith, the earth with its grains and its sunshine and its animals and its ketchup. I ate hot-faced with two hands, head bowed. There was just enough in the soft purse for the week. On hamburger day, I always bartered with my appetite, which howled like a wolf protecting a forest full of cubs. From the chagrin of the line, I would defend my cubs by eating them. Beating. It was a privilege. I was privileged to stand in the courtyard and beat, furiously, the two gray bricks together. Others sneezed, coughed, I clapped harder, accepting the dust on clothes and hair, enjoying how uniformly it enveloped me, how instantaneously it aged whatever it settled on. In the window was an old woman clapping erasers. I understood her not as reflection, but projection. We stopped moving our arms together and instead pushed them outward, beating the erasers against the stone wall between us, inches from the glass that separated us from our most riotous impulses. Without rain, there would be markings, white rectangles whose crosshatch would announce the violence that had happened there. Social studies. Clockwise left, front row, the boy with the scar, the boy with one brown eye and one blue eye, the bow-legged girl, The girl who said, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. The girl, second row. The boy, the girl, the knuckle sandwich boy, the boy who once had a patch on his eye. The girl with the soft hair, its sheen like a corn husk. The boy. Third row. The girl who taught everyone the language whereby the vowel comes first and the rest of the word goes to the end with a long A sound, said her family invented it, said later she herself invented it, and twice accused me of spying. The girl with sad eyes and dark knees, the very small boy, the boy with the beautiful name and the crumbs of dirt behind his ear, the boy, the girl, fourth row. The girl who loved Abraham Lincoln, the girl, the boy who kept shoelaces and small metal figurines inside his desk, me. The map rolled noisily down over the blackboard. The Santa Maria sailed noisily over the sea filled with noisy men hungry for spices. The noise of revolution, rebellion. In some countries, belching is considered polite. Words like favorite and parlor have use. Everyone must pull from the box one slip of paper with a president's name on it and write a report on him. Use clear covers. The dioramas are to be completed next week in time for parents' night. Please respect the property and feelings of others, the study of countries, colonies, and cities, the study of people, the study of other people and cultures, swabbing their throats for exotic germs and watching, rapt, as they multiply and kill each other. Safety. Propaganda. There were buses for students and buses for city students. It was said that the city buses were dangerous, favored sites for pickpockets and knife fights. The other buses were yellow and emblazoned with the school's name. Everyone who rode one was happy, safe. Language arts. The story as a joke. The more people it passes among, the funnier it gets. When someone was called upon to read aloud, the joke would become almost unbearable. The first read with a lisp and the second with a stutter. Whoever laughed first would have to read next. The third wheezed and mispronounced virtue and pious. I held my breath and ran my fingernail along a deep black groove on my desk, a ballpoint laceration. The ink still glinted blue-black. The titters flapped wildly in my ears, tiny wings of cruelty. When my name was called, I read without error, and the mirth grew, unkind. Under the helpless glare of the teacher, dread and humiliation wrapped long fingers around our throats, siphoned all the air and equanimity from the room, so that near the end, only the clock, a choke, and a gasp could be heard. Okay, I'm going to stop there and thank Apostrophe Cast for allowing me to do this and to read part of what is very much in progress, which is exciting and useful. It's nice to hear how things sound before they're set in stone, if they're ever set in stone. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Apostrophe Cast. Join us in 2 weeks when the writer Richard Nathan reads an excerpt of his memoir from his walk from Nova Scotia to Mexico. More information can also be found at www.apostrophecast.com.